This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to The First Time.
Kate, I think we've done it.
I think we have. You'd think that we would have the technology down by now, right?
I know. We are very spoiled being in a studio most of the time.
We are. We're not currently in the studio. I am currently in the lovely community centre near where I live, looking out on a gorgeous, hot and blustery day. Where are you, Catherine?
I'm at home. It's a 37 degree day, isn't it?
It's really quite hot. However, now we have connected, tell me, how have you been? What's been happening?
Good. I'm between events. So we were going to catch up about event prep and different bits and pieces. So last week I did an event with Darabin Council around the launch. They do a literary magazine every year called Inscribe. And so as part of that, they did a live podcast recording.
First, how did you get this gig?
So I had done another event. Darabin's got a really active culture department, I guess. A few months ago, I did something where they got 10 different writers and artists that live locally, and they've done this, I think, 3 or 4 years in a row. Got 10 different artists and 10 different locations, and they had two events. And the first event was the 10 artists. They matched you with a place. It was really good. So they matched you with a place. Mine was a sculpture. And then you had a second event. You each had to write a piece and then read it out at this second event. And the second event might have had sort of 100 people or something. So it's just a super local celebration of writers and things. And through that, the woman, Liz Welch, who manages that department, she convenes this literary magazine. So she had asked, would I be happy to host an interview section with authors that they would record and then sort of promote and stuff online.
So you are now, let's be frank, the darling of Darabin.
Darabin is chock-a-block full of writers. Like, there are so, like, I think Mark Brandy had done this event. When I did it, it was one of the Kates from the catering show.
You just can't walk anywhere without running into a bloody writer in Darabin.
There are heaps. Like, it's great. It's really good.
Well, I do hope you're all listening to this podcast. So how did the event go?
It was good. It does make you realise I was in doing the prep for it. When you first start being interviewed for your book, you think that all of the interview is on you, but then when you start interviewing people, you realise how much it's a two-way dance.
It really is. It's a two-way dance.
It's just, yeah, it's a dual energy, that's for sure.
So are you trying to very diplomatically say that your dancing partner wasn't dancing with you?
Not at all. I more was it like that moment of when you're the interviewer and preparing. When you're the interviewee, you think it's all on you. But then when you're the interviewer, you're like, no, this is all on me. But it is actually a two-way sort of stream.
It really is. Okay. If you were there with Catherine on the night, don't feel bad anymore because she's clarified.
It is harder to interview. I would objectively say that. And I would say that of myself having been interviewed, you get better at it.
You start to know your story. It's remember when Graham Simsion told us, you know your story. I think Jack Heath said the same thing.
Exactly.
Why is it all men who have this particular approach to it, that you get really good at telling the story and it just rolls off the tongue?
To the point where it becomes hard to deviate from the story sometimes. I think you get in the mode of, this is my...
Although a good interviewer can get you to deviate from the story.
That's true.
So nerves, how were you feeling nerves-wise?
Okay, actually. I always do exercise straight before a thing.
So you go to the gym or go for a swim or something and then go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not know this about you.
Yeah. It's like it gets all your nervous energy out. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. I always liked Amy Poehler, who's on Saturday Night Live or was on Saturday Night Live. she did a biography, and she sort of talked about, I mean, she's a great comedian, but she talked about how she did this gig. It was a massive gig, but she gave a B-grade performance. And she sort of makes this comment that I'm at a stage in my career where I'm okay with a B-grade performance. I don't know why I take a lot of comfort from that comment, but I think it's that the more events and bits and pieces you do, and this event was great. Like, it went really well. I'm really happy with how it went. But the less you catastrophize around them in those early stages. Like, they feel like life or death. And if it doesn't do well, it's like, oh, my God, that's it.
Yeah, true. One just has to rock up to these things.
What about you? What have you been up to?
So on that exact same night that you were doing that gig, I was doing what has fast become one of my favourite gigs of the year, when I go to Trentham Primary School and I officially launch the picture books that the grade four students have written. And the reason it's my favourite gig of the year, so I do a little camp with them, kind of, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks previously, and we talk about where stories come from and we do some plotting and character and setup and things like that. And then they work with their amazing teacher on creating these stories and then illustrating them and putting the blurb on and the rest of it. And they are so damn proud. And when I get to this event, their community hasn't seen them yet. So they haven't been allowed to take them home or anything like that. They do a little speech. I give each student an award, talk up a little bit, give them each a blurb.
So what's the award? It's like a personalised
award, like for, you know, crazy use of metaphor or, you know, the dinosaur who did the most daring thing, et cetera, that kind of stuff. But their little faces... Oh my goodness, like it gets me every time. I nearly cry every time. This is only the second year I've done it, but it's just seeing kids invested so much in a story they have created, but even more so, and I tell them this, the scariest bit that is both thrilling and so nerve-wracking is the sharing of it, right? So I'm here for this bit, watching you guys get to share it for the first time, and each time it restores my faith in humanity. Also, Trentham is really pretty. At this time of year, it's got lovely flowers. All the people are very pleasant. And you get to crack out at least two podcasts or a good chunk of your audiobook on the way up and back. So, I mean, like, it's a win-win for me. So that was my gig last week. And I think I also did a... In Convo, was that last week, with Chris Hammer.
I saw that.
He's on our list, who were meant to be here in Canberra when we make it to Canberra again, finally. And that was terrific as well. Very easy to interview an old journo, I might say. Mm. But, yeah, that was a cracker too. So I do like my midweek events.
Do you think they take up a lot of energy?
They take up less energy now than they used to. And I think it's that same thing you were just talking about. I no longer spend a whole heap of time worrying about what's going to happen. One of the things that I have done that I think is really important is that I used to, for instance, before any conversation, I'd read the book a hell of a way in advance. I'd start doing research and start doing questions. And then I'd basically spend either the whole day or a number of hours ahead of the event doing all that again. Yeah. And now I've realised I don't need to do that. I know that habitually I will need to go over the research and my questions again the day before. And now I feel pretty confident in doing questions. So often I will only write them the day of or the day before the event. As long as I've read the book and I do that in a more leisurely kind of fashion, or I know what I'm doing, I'm much more efficient with my time and I don't let things blow out so much. And I know what I need to spend time on to make sure I get a good result.
I reckon people who have good online resources like blogs or writing they've done about writing or podcast interviews and all the rest of it make that research process not only easy but really, I just remember interviewing Lee Kaufman and there was so much stuff on her website and it was a real delight to have a reason to burrow through it all.
Yeah. Well, it also, I reckon it lets you do more of that thing that I'm sure Richard Vibler does it, but it's now Sarah Kanoski, who I think is the true hero there, that she knows There's a lot of what the people she's interviewing, there's a lot of that story that she already knows and that she knows she has to bring to the fore. So she prompts in this incredible way because of all the research that she's done. And then you also do leave room for surprises, because when people are feeling like they don't need to say the same thing to you over and over again, they do delight you with that additional stuff, which I think is really nice. But yes, people out there, put good stuff on your blog or your website. Say yes to the podcast interviews, because it makes it easier for people like us when we have to interview you again.
Speaking of which, on that topic, I did think we should say that we get quite a lot of requests from publicists and publishers and authors and authors' friends requesting to be on the show. And I don't know that we have been completely on top of replying to people. So we should just have a public service or a public announcement that we really appreciate all the contacts. We have planned out season two at the moment, and in, I would say, December, we'll be planning out season three. So we will.
We've got a big list already lined up. And what we should say about that too is it has happened very quickly that that we are no longer kind of sending really deeply buttering up emails to our friends and saying, excuse me, do you think that maybe you would like to come on our podcast, to having publicists, you know, sending us books, which is ace and incredible and amazing. But it also means we've had to quickly scramble to work out, you know, exactly what our criteria and making sure we've got a whole range of different people to bring to you. So keep them coming. We see all the emails. They are all flagged. It's just life, huh? November, December. It's just madness. What have you got coming up? You've got one more thing, which I see is already sold out, so that's not useful to our listeners.
Well, it's sold out, but they have some tickets they've reserved for On the Door. This is a literary debate. I'm really looking forward to it. It's through the book show. It'll be on Radio National in December, but the debate itself is live next week. I'm on a team with Jock Sarong and Robert Lukens. And we are the affirmative team, arguing that the artist's only responsibility is to their art, which is a
love it
quote. And then we are against Angela Savage, Melanie Cheng, and Wayne McCauley.
Wowzers, this is going to be fierce.
Yeah, well, I think it's actually really hard. Because I think, so Alice from the book show called me, and she was going to call on this day and work out what team I was on. But she said, you're the third female I've called, and the other two want to go on the negative team, so you have to go on the affirmative team.
Did you get to be third?
Yeah. No, I got to be first. Yeah. I totally wanted to be first, because then you don't have to rebut. But I've since found out that it's more theatrical than strict adherence to the debate style. You don't really have to rebut. But I'm happy to be first speaker. First speaker's the best.
You like a rule, though. I mean, you like rules. Like, what is this, theatrics? How far can they go? Doesn't matter. You can just sit back and enjoy.
Well, Robert Lukens keeps saying that you're better off not being too invested. It's like a game show on TV, that you're better off not being too competitive, which I totally agree with. But 6 minutes is also a long time to talk if you've got nothing to talk about.
I have no doubt that you will smash this. I cannot wait to debrief on how all this went down. And let's say to our listeners too, if Phoebe can manage to make our conversation across the suburbs on this hot day sound like excellent audio, then she is even more of a master than I already thought she was.
And what about you? Have you got events coming up? I know you've got meetings.
I think I'm nearly done. Oh, I am. I'm going to meet with my good publishing folk up in Sydney, which is very exciting. But this delightful thing has happened in my year where my teaching gigs are done, and I'm just working on some final edits and getting next year kind of all set up for a brand new project, which I'm really excited about. Just bring it on.
Jerry Platez is a fearless new Australian literary voice and the founder of Cara Sevda Press, an imprint focused on representing authors who are women of colour. Her novel, On the Sunday She Created God, is the first book released on the imprint. Welcome, Jerry.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, Jerry, you're not only the author of On the Sunday She Created God, you also head up the publishing press that published it. But we'll start with the writing. How and why did you start writing the book?
I started writing, well, I started writing the book because I felt like I can take literature to, I felt like there was representation lacking in the sort of literature that I wanted to write. So I think it's, the name doesn't come to my mind right now, but a great woman of literature once said, Toni Morrison said, there you go, Toni Morrison, I believe.
Who died this year.
I know, I was so sad. Mm. I actually spelled my name with an I because I love her so much.
Ah, really?
Yeah. Yeah. But she actually said if something along the lines of if you want to read a great book and it hasn't been written, then that's what you should be doing. Something along the lines of the sentiment. And so that sort of always resonated with me. And so I started writing the book pretty much straight after I finished my course at Creative Writing at Wollongong Uni.
And so where did the initial idea come from?
The initial idea, so the characters are like composite characters of people that I know, which is probably why they feel so real to people. In fact, that's a feedback I get a lot. People say, my God, like Ren is like exactly like me or exactly like my best friend, or Babel is like my other crazy friend. So it's like a composite structure of people that I love and people I feel are compelling and dangerous and interesting, all wrapped up into these three characters.
So one of the things that the main character, Ren, does in the book is she carries around a manuscript that she's been working on. Is that what you did? What was your writing process like?
Yeah, that is what I did.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't to that extent, but I find myself, you know, because I commute a lot. Like, I'm a writer who works. Like, I've had every job under the sun. Like, I've had cleaning jobs. I've worked in call centres predominantly. So I find myself in that commute period where I'm going to my day job or I'm going to my latest gig. That commute period is so important, and it's where your mind starts to become creative. So, yeah, that the whole book was pretty much drafted, like, on trams and trains and planes. I wrote a lot when I was in South America.
Because we have a lot of authors that we interview that talk about writing on public transport. Yeah. So what does that look like? You have to be sitting down, obviously. Do you have to be sitting down?
Yeah.
And
you
do it by hand with a book?
With a book, yeah, with notebooks, yeah. Yeah. But I've wrote a lot of my book in South America as well, so that downtime that you have at airports, or that downtime that the few seconds you have before your train gets there, or all that downtime when your mind is super vulnerable, is probably one of the most like interesting parts to be creative in your day. So that's what I did. Yeah.
And so does a writing process like that lend itself to planning out, or do you just fly by the seat of your pants?
I think it's like, cause I've heard you ask this question. I listen to your podcast. I really like it.
Oh, thank you.
I've heard you ask this question to other people as well, and I find it very interesting, their answers. But for me, it's like, you have to, being a writer, you have to be a bit of an artist. You've got to be able to blend sort of a little bit of chaos into structure. So you have to sort of think of, what are my times to be creative and how do I optimize them? So there is absolutely like structure, but there's also like, you know, riding on a tram is like something that I have to do because of my life. And so there is structure, but there's also a little bit of chemistry with the world that you're interacting with, and you can't plan those things, those like moments where you're like touched or you're inspired or you need to write this down for yourself in the future. Those are the moments which make literature magic, which make you want to be a writer, and you can't plan that.
That's a very good response.
Thanks.
So do you think you, in those moments on public transport or those moments of creativity, are you interacting with your surrounds, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or it is a direct inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah. Observation is powerful. Yeah, it's important for writing as well.
And so once the novel was finished, what happened next?
So once the novel was finished, it sat on my very old computer as a PDF document for a long time.
So you typed it up from the notes that you had made?
Yeah. So I wrote a bunch of like sort of notes and ideas for characters and stories and narrative nodes that I'd follow and weave into my structure, and then I'd go home and I'd type it up,
right,
or I'd find space in my week to type, to actually put it down in the form of a book. And in those moments, like in those moments, it's like, I guess that's where the structure and the discipline comes into it. So you can like go off and live your life and interact with the world and be inspired and find sneaky parts of your day where you have to pay the rent, but you also want to be a writer. Mm. But then the discipline aspect of being a writer definitely comes down to what time of your week or day do you sit down and actually compose this thing that needs to be written. Whether if it's because you've got a deal or because you've got something to say, it doesn't matter. That's where the discipline sort of side of things falls into
place. It's really interesting how much you can separate that out in some ways, that one is that real creative end and the other is the discipline. And you sort of, sounds like you do that across the week. You move from one phase to the other. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah.
And so you have the completed manuscript on your computer. What did you do with it?
I entered it into prizes. And I also sort of pitched it around a little bit. I sort of flirted with the idea of getting an agent, but I found the process very frustrating, to be honest. And so it's just sort of sat there for a while, and I thought, okay, well, obviously people don't want to read my work, and I took.
Did you hear back from people or
no? And yep, that's sort of
really hard.
Yeah, that definitely. And I've heard this being talked about as well on the podcast. That sort of deafening silence from the industry is something that I grapple with as well. And it's part of the reason why I started Karasevta, because I think there needs to be like a cultural shift. It's not okay for us to live in a community full of creatives. We're all writers. We are all understanding of each other. And it's not okay for us to not receive at least feedback. So that's what I'm trying to shift with Karasevta, with my press.
So what is the philosophy of the press?
The philosophy of the press is to take voices which would otherwise be marginalised or put on a slush pile, and to take those manuscripts and really mentor and create and help build those manuscripts to the point where they can be marketable or they can be published. So it's really about empowering marginalised. And when I say marginalised, I do the air quotes. Marginalised voices, for me, women of colour right now and First Nation women are probably, I think, a segment of our community, literary and also broadly, macro, who are probably suffering the most and need more platforms dedicated to them. So that's why I decided to start Karasevta.
And so what's Karasevta working on at the moment?
Currently we're working on a Bleed Baby Bleed, which is our journal. So it's going to be a multi-platform journal. It's going to be digital, looking into monetizing the digital side of things. So running it like an ID or a Vice Mag, but from an intersectional female lens.
Wow.
And then,
what does that look like physically? Like, digital means it's not physical.
Yeah.
But
like on your screen?
Yeah. So like you, it's like you could read it on Kindle. You can read it on iPad. Is that the kind of?
Yeah. So like.
Or you read it through a website.
Read it through a website.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So it's going to be journalistic driven.
Yep.
So it'll be like you can follow. We'll have a Twitter account. We'll have an Instagram account. So it'll be like a fashion culture journalistic driven sort of website. And then there's the print version, which will be more the conventional sort of literary journal, which will feature poetry, fiction, criticism, essays. So it'll be more the conventional side of literary sort of journals. And so that project is the next project that I'm working on, which is like really building community and really getting like a base of talent and developing talent and working with talent. And so, yeah.
So you, the Karasevta Press, you obviously didn't have a background necessarily in publishing. You must have learned a lot along the way.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So you decide to establish the press. Where do you go from there? What do you do?
So then it was just about, I have like an advertising background. So I worked in advertising for a little while, and I also did a bit of copywriting. And so I've exposed to the comms side of like corporate side, to the workforce. So I have that in my mind already. And, I think I have a natural sense of business as well, which has also sort of helped me a lot in the recent months that I've been doing Karasevta. Wait, I got sidetracked. What was your question again?
No. So what do you do? So you're setting up the press. You have a manuscript that you're interested in publishing.
Yeah.
So did you go through an editing process? Did you work with someone to kind of do a structural edit or a copy edit or to polish the manuscript.
Yeah, definitely. So from creating the book, there was like a, I think the book overall took me like a matter of 3 years to write, to just build out a couple of drafts. And then from then it was a matter of cutting it down and editing it to the size that it is now. So I worked with two editors along the way. And the second editor that I had was not from an editing background, which probably lends to the energy of the book, which is, which is not traditional. So, I did work with editors. I found non-traditional editors to work with. I found people who understood my literary voice and who I felt comfortable with and who I respected. And then it was a matter of the design of the cover. So then who did I like? What artistic sort of aesthetic was I drawn to? What was easy to make on an economic level? Black and white is easy to print. It's fast. It looks great. And it's also creating cut through in publishing as well. Not many people have the aesthetic that Kara Sevta has. So then it's a matter of working with what I have and then carving out a specific space for Kara Sevta. So the book was very much a preliminary stage. The book is a Trojan horse into publishing, and then everything else has fallen through, has come through.
And, I mean, I got my copy at Readings Bookshop. How did you go about establishing relationships with bookshops?
Stalking people and find, well, not stalking them. Let's be a little bit softer. Finding them. And then the industry has been quite open in that sense. I think it's because I've got a lot of heart behind what I'm doing. I'm not just a suit. So
people
just finding them.
I know that Brunswick Bound Bookshop, for example, in Brunswick are a huge supporter of local of local smaller press, and I think some of the works that they have from authors that are self-published have done extraordinarily well.
Yeah, they actually said that to me the other day because I had an event there, and Megan from Brunswick Bound was like, actually self-published authors sell really well here. That's really good. I think if you have heart and you have strategy as well, then people are very open to it. So it's just a matter of putting yourself in front of them and asking. You don't ask, you don't get. Yeah.
So what's been the hardest bit?
I wish I can. Sometimes I look at writers who are like, you know, have deals with the Hachette and, talking on, or Penguin or, Text or Black Ink, like publishers I really respect as well. And they have these sweet deals, like they're going to festivals or they're talking here, they're talking there. And sometimes I get a little bit, oh, I wish I could do that. But all the PR I have, I generate myself. So me and, the Kara Sevda team. So it's a bit of a slower process. And sometimes I look at that and think, if I didn't have my business hat on, then I could write so much more.
That's a hard balance, isn't it?
Yeah. So I miss writing. I don't do a lot of writing these days. But, I guess that's what I miss.
But what's been the highlight?
The highlight of the whirlwind?
Of the whole experience, be it writing or be it the publication experience?
They're very different experiences as a writer and as a publisher. They're very different. So the writing side of things, this book was almost never published. I lost faith in my own writing for a long time. And it took people that I love to convince me to put this out on my own. So I guess from a writing perspective, I think the most satisfying thing, the most fulfilling thing has been feedback that I've gotten from people who have read it and said, oh my God, this is exactly like my life. It was like I've had so many good reviews and so much positive feedback. It's sort of fuel for me to continue to do what I do, to believe in books again and to believe in publishing. And then there's the publishing side of things. There's like the business side of things. There's, suit wearing Jerry. And the most fulfilling side of that is to meet people like yourself, people who are trying to create, I don't want to say content, but trying to create something different and trying to empower other people, trying to connect on a community level. And to be part of that community as a publisher has been really fulfilling.
Oh, that's good. And so looking back, what advice would you give yourself or any other first-time author?
I thought about that a lot. I would say there's a lot of advice out there for first-timers. I would say the most important thing as a writer that you have to do is is believing your own work, because there are going to be a lot of people who say, this would be great, but you have to do this. And there is a certain element of like taking feedback on, but at the end of the day, the person who wakes up in the morning to write is you. You need to believe in your mission. You need to believe in your artistic vision, and you need to believe in your ability to execute your vision. And if you don't believe in that, then don't do it, because you'll never survive.
Good advice. Do you also, before we go into the first time quick five, want to put a call out to people who would like to submit to Kara Save the Press?
Yeah.
What do they do?
We have a very strong digital strategy. So, which is just fancy words for get in touch with me through Instagram.
Your Instagram's amazing though.
Thank you. I've tried to integrate a lot of different elements like activism and art and stuff into it. So thanks. That's nice feedback. If you want to get involved, we are fueled and run by women of colour, First Nation women. So if you fit into those categories, if you're an artist or you're a poet or you're someone that wants to just get involved in the project, then just follow Kara Save the Press on Instagram. You can also get in touch with me through the website, which is www.karasavedepress.com. And I'm also on Twitter, so Jerry Platez. Yep.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to move into the first time quick five.
Yeah, hit me.
For your first time, agented or unagented?
Unagented.
Advance or no advance?
No advance.
Overseas territories or ANZ?
ANZ, but overseas next year.
Fantastic. Well done.
Thanks.
And festival invites or no festival invites?
Festival invites, but all of our own hustle.
Good on you. I feel like that's an important message for anyone to hear, like that the hustle goes a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And sometimes it's quiet time after the hustle and you're like, oh, well, that was, can I swear on this?
Sort of the silent time, isn't
it? Yeah, it's like, well, that was for effing nothing. But then something comes up and you're like, oh, wow, that was like months ago. This is so interesting. So the hustle always pays off.
And what is your favourite novel by a debut author?
I'm going to say Jamie Marina Lau's book was incredible. And what Brow Books are doing right now is amazing.
They
as
are
well.
Amazing. Do you know that is our number one most listened to episode?
Really?
Yeah, by far. And it's interesting because it's the last episode of the first season. So normally you have this kind of trend where they increase over time, but hers is a standout.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great message. We're ready for experimental, cutting edge, modern literature.
So Kara Save the Press wants to hear from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast, a podcast about the first and second time you publish a book. We recorded this episode at RMIT University on the traditional land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This podcast is produced by Phoebe Ady. The First Time Podcast is supported by Writers Victoria, ACT Writers Centre, RMIT School of Media and Communication, and by our wonderful supporters on Patreon. You too can become a supporter of our podcast by heading to our Patreon site, www.patreon.com/thefirsttimepodcast.